Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam has made her first public statements on Sunday's historic elections. She told reporters on Tuesday the central government in Beijing has not asked her to take responsibility for the vote, where opponents of Chinese rule won by a landslide. She admitted the results highlighted frustration with her government among the public. Democratic candidates in the Chinese-ruled city won almost 90% of seats in the district council elections. That's more than quadruple the number from 4 years ago.
Greenhouse gases in the atmosphere hit a new record last year, not only increasing, but at a faster rate than the average rise of the past decade. The World Meteorological Organization revealed the news on Monday. The WMO said the concentration of carbon dioxide, a product of burning fossil fuels which is the biggest contributor to global warming, surged from 405.5 parts per million in 2017 to 407.8 ppm in 2018.
Uber has been stripped of its London license. Regulators said a, quote, pattern of failures made it unfit to operate in the city. One particular danger was cited. A change to Uber systems allowed unauthorized drivers to upload their photos to other drivers' profiles. That meant they could pick up passengers as if they were the booked driver. Transport for London says that happened about 14,000 times. Uber called the decision extraordinary and wrong.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to The Opening Bell. I am Paul Lisnick from WGN-TV, in for Steve. This morning, I'm the political analyst over at WGN-TV, along as being the host of Politics Tonight, every weeknight, live on CLTV. And I host the podcast for WGN Plus, called Behind the Curtain, a mixture of theater and politics. And today we're going to do some theater during the show. Glad you are here. We've got some fun stuff we're going to be doing this half hour. I'll be talking with Lisa Deitlin. She is the queen of financial giving, of giving back. This is the era and time of Thanksgiving. And so it's important we kind of remind ourselves that it is time to give back. And by the way, Tuesday is going to be a formal day of giving, so it's a nice day to talk about that. Second part of the show, I'm going to be talking to actor, director, writer Phil Smith. He is with Looking Glass Theater. We're going to talk a bit about the business of theater. You know, buying tickets or getting a subscription to a theater does not cover the cost of keeping a theater going. And when you are a Chicago treasure like the Looking Glass Theater, which has ensemble members, founding members like David Schwimmer from Friends, just some great stuff over there, it's important that we keep it going in the city. So that's what's coming up today. Let's check the markets. Kind of a mixed board today. The Dow futures down 2 right now. The S&P futures are down about 0.25. NASDAQ futures up 0.75. Looking over in Europe, the DAX down about 27. The FTSE up about 10. And the CAC is down about 3.5. Looking over to Asia, the Nikkei up about 80 points. The Shanghai down 0.89. And the Hang Seng is down about 80 points as well for the day. Farmers are blocking Berlin roads to protest government policies. Thousands of tractors heading into Berlin as farmers protest the German government's agricultural policies. Police say some 5,000 tractors, 10,000 farmers expected for Tuesday's protest against planned environmental protection regulations that they just say are overly restrictive. Demonstrators plan to block wide areas of the capital with a slow-moving convoy of the tractors, which were gathering at the landmark Brandenburg Gate. Chancellor Angela Merkel's cabinet in September decided on a series of proposals, including tighter restrictions on the use of pesticides and herbicides to protect insects and fertilizers to protect groundwater. Farmers say the government should work with them, conservation groups, to find ways to protect the environment while preserving the competitiveness of farms. Merkel's invited leaders of the movement to talks to begin at the beginning of December. Over in Hong Kong, Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba shares have jumped more than 8% in their debut on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange by midday on Tuesday. Alibaba was trading at 188.10 Hong Kong dollars per share. Its listing price was 176 Hong Kong dollars. Alibaba already traded in New York. The offering of 500 million new shares raised more than 11 billion in Hong Kong's biggest listing since 2010. It's a rare boost for the city after months of political unrest. And over in Europe, London's Transit Authority has refused to renew Uber's operating license over imposter drivers. The ride-hailing company vows to appeal the decision as it struggles to secure its future in the British capital. Transport for London cited breaches that put passengers and their safety at risk in its decision, citing, among other things, unauthorized drivers carried out thousands of rides. And over in Australia, beleaguered Westpac chief executive Brian Hartzer has announced he'll step down following accusations of Australia's second biggest bank committed 23 million breaches of the anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism financing laws. The bank's chairman, Lindsay Maxsted, announced he'll retire earlier than planned. Hartzer is the third top executive from the country's four major banks to depart in the last 18 months amidst the scandal-plagued Australian banking sector. Let's talk about the season of giving. You know, we're just a couple of days away from Thanksgiving, and so many homes are sitting around enjoying turkeys and hams and pass me the mashed potatoes and, oh, I need more cranberry sauce over here. I can't eat another bite. But, you know, while we're stuffing ourselves, there are over 40 million Americans for whom Thanksgiving and all the days before it and after it are just one more day of being hungry. Yeah, there's that many people who are hungry and starving, and we can do something about it. So I wanted to talk to an expert who can guide us and tell us exactly what to do. Lisa Deitlin is the president and CEO of the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy, or Transformation Philanthropy. Lisa, welcome to the Morning Bell.
Good morning, Paul, and happy Tuesday.
Well, thank you, and to you, and you are just as awake as anybody can be. But, you know, it is a serious time for people who are hungry. I kind of gave a statistic. The truth is, hunger could be around the corner for any of us, right?
Absolutely, it can be. You know, it's masked a lot in this country. When we grew up, I mean, we think about hunger in third world countries being bloated bellies or lack of food. And sometimes in America, it's masked in obesity or lack of nutritional food. There are more than, as your statistics showed, more than 40 million Americans who hunger is an everyday reality. 365 days, 24/7, it's always there. So people say, well, Lisa, what does it look like? And I say, well, it's the mom who waters down the milk so that it goes further. It's the dad who skips a meal so that his kids can eat. It's children who've never had seconds of anything because there's just not enough food to go around. And we tend to just think of it at this time of year, and I'm always puzzled by that because, you know, hunger exists in April, it exists in September, exists in July, and there's so many things we can do.
Well, let's talk about what we can do, certainly at this time. You know, probably the easiest thing for some people, if you have the resources, is make a donation, money or otherwise, to a food pantry.
It is. That is best. Cash is king, as I always like to say. And food banks, there are more than 200 of them here in this country covering every county that exists and Puerto Rico that makes sure that food is being distributed to those in need. So what's interesting is they have 4 to 6 times the buying power that we do. So think about it. If you're scrambling right now during the holidays and you're thinking, oh, I got to do something, and you're filling your shopping cart, if you buy $10 worth of food, that's $10 worth of food you give. But if you give $10 to a food bank, they actually, through the relationships with various food companies, can buy $40 worth of food.
So for people who don't think of it that way, they think of, hey, I made an extra turkey. Where can I bring this? I mean, generally, that's not the kind of thing you want to bring to a food pantry. But there are ways of just providing a wonderful holiday meal, or for that matter, meals all the time for people, if that's the way you want to do it.
There is. It's a little late now if you have that extra turkey and you decide you want it to be on the Thanksgiving table, because food banks have already distributed the food more than a week ago. So those that are in need have the fixings, you know, to fix their meal, to prepare their meal on Thanksgiving. But so many amazing nonprofit organizations serve food, especially on Thanksgiving. So you think about our service clubs, like our VFWs, our Elks, our Moose Clubs. You think about our pantries and our churches. Many houses of worship will serve a meal on Thanksgiving Day. So you can volunteer that way to go with your family. And I often say, make it a tradition. Call ahead and ask how you can help. You can also think about what are they doing at organizations where perhaps there's a celebration that's a little out of the norm and they need volunteers. Think about hospitals where there might be people who are ill and don't have anyone visiting them, but the hospital staff is going to try to do something nice on Thanksgiving. Or the VA centers. You know, we're so focused on our veterans these days, and oftentimes they need a little cheering up too. So, but call ahead first. Call ahead and see what's needed, and you and your family or you and your friends could make that part of your holiday tradition.
You know, Lisa, you could have been a teacher or a banker or whatever. You and I talk several times during the year, both on the TV side and Politics Tonight, and when I cover radio, you'll join me at this time of year. Why do you do what you do?
Oh, you know, people have asked me that my whole life, at least my professional career, and I think it's just in my DNA. I think it's in all of our DNA, in all of us as Americans. You know, the Americans are considered the most generous individuals in the world, and I don't know if that's true or not. I know that philanthropy is the most formalized in the United States, and that it's neighbor giving to neighbor. And at this time of year, when we think about that first Thanksgiving with the pilgrims who came on the Mayflower, and the indigenous people gathering together, whether the story's true or not, happened this time of year or not, it's a wonderful metaphor for the way that America came together, that we didn't have a monarch or state religion providing the funding for the things we needed at schools, hospitals, orphanages, churches, libraries, what have you. And I just think, you know, asking on behalf of someone who cannot ask for themselves is one of the noblest things that you can do. It's an amazing career, and it's every day when I put my head on the pillow at night, I think I made the world a little bit better for somebody else today. And there's no better feeling than that, Paul.
It's funny, every time you post something or I see something where you're sharing an update, one of your hashtags is Love My Life. And that really hits me because you do enjoy what you do and it's so important. I want to turn to Tuesday, December 3rd. It's going to be here before we know it. I think people know that it's Giving Tuesday, but they might not. So tell them what they need to do on Tuesday and all year round.
Well, Giving Tuesday is in its eighth year, so hopefully people are aware. It's a global movement. It's a giving day. It's to compete with, you know, Black Friday and Small Business Saturday and Cyber Monday. So let's have a Giving Tuesday. It's the first Tuesday after Thanksgiving every year for your listeners who aren't aware of it. And it is a movement by nonprofits, both in the United States and now internationally, to raise awareness and say, let's kick off this giving season. Most of us have our mailboxes very full at this time of year by appeals from our favorite nonprofits, and some that we say, how in the world did I get on this list? You know, why am I getting this appeal? As you know, Paul, I often share, you know, don't let guilt drive your philanthropic decisions, drive your charitable donations. Think about three things. What did you do last year? Who did you give to last year? What is really important to you? Most of us give to our house of worship, our alma mater, maybe our kids' school, and have one or two others. And then think about, did something change in your family or your living circumstances that has made you more aware of a cause? For example, did somebody adopt a baby? And all of a sudden you want to give to an organization that supports adoption. Did someone in your family get a disease? Did they get breast cancer or have a kidney transplant? And all of a sudden that's popped to the top of your list. Then one of your favorites, did somebody adopt a dog? And all of a sudden, you know, this cute little puppy or cat is running around and you want to make sure that animals are taken care of all year round. Think about what may be changed in your circumstances. Set a budget and make a difference in everyone's life, because then you will do the hashtag Love My Life. because it will be amazing the change that you see happen.
One of the things that that you've just said that I think is really powerful, and I think makes giving easier for folks who, you know, maybe aren't going to, but it is about giving something that matters to you. Yesterday, I was at the Anti-Cruelty Society. I'm all about dogs. They named a tribute wall after me because of the support I give them. I lost my mom to Alzheimer's last year. I give to them. My parents had polio years ago. March of Dimes was at their bedside to help them. I give to them. The whole point of finding something that makes a difference in your life, it's not just helping. It actually warms your own heart because you're helping something that's impacted you, your family, your friends.
It does. And at this time of year, when we get gathered together with friends and family, whether it's actually on Thanksgiving or it's the following, you know, few days or during the holiday season, I often encourage people, take time and talk about it. It's not about trying to convince somebody to care about dogs if they don't, and they care about cats or they care about zoos or whatever their cause is. It's about having that conversation, bringing it to the forefront to say, you know, this is what I'm supporting this year. What are you supporting? One of my good friends, who is a great fundraiser, he said, you know, when he was receiving an award, he said, you know, you go to any other city and they say, you know, what's your business?
Right.
In Chicago, people say, what's your philanthropy? What do you care about?
And it's so critical to what we do. Lisa, we're out of time, but people who want to reach you, where can they do that?
At my website, lisadietlin.com, or online at lisadietlin, D-I-E-T-L-I-N.
Lisa Dietlin, the president and CEO of Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. You're the best. Thanks for being with me.
Happy Thanksgiving, Paul.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
And welcome back to The Opening Bell. I am WGN-TV's Paul Lisnick. I'm in for Steve today. You watch me on our WGN number one rated news programs covering politics, and every night at 5:30 p.m., a live show called Politics Tonight on CLTV. And hopefully you check out my podcast at WGN Plus. It's called Behind the Curtain, where I do theater, politics, all sorts of fun stuff. And we're going to be doing theater later during this segment, because I'll be talking to Philip Smith. He's the producing director and ensemble member at one of the city's great treasures, the Looking Glass Theater. If you haven't seen anything there, it's in the old Water Tower place, Water Tower building, not Water Tower Place, the shopping center. It's in one of the few buildings that survived the Chicago fire. It's an amazing space. They do amazing things. You got to check it out. We'll talk more about it. We'll talk about the business of running a theater organization, because ticket sales, it just doesn't do it. Let's take a look at the markets. Things looking more down than up today, a bit mixed. The Dow futures down 6 points, expected to be. The S&P futures down about 0.75 points. NASDAQ futures up 0.25. Looking over to Europe, the DAX is down 26 points. The FTSE is up just over 9 points, and the CAC is down just about 2 points. In Asia, the Nikkei up 80 points. The Shanghai is up 0.89 points. And the Hang Seng is down just about 80 points. So as I say, that's sort of a mixed bag for what's going on today. China's Commerce Ministry says the lead envoys in trade talks between China and the U.S., they spoke on the phone. And they agreed to continue to work towards a preliminary agreement for resolving the tariff war. The Chinese Commerce Ministry said in a brief notice that Vice Premier Liu He and other Chinese officials spoke with U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin early Tuesday, and that would be Beijing time. China and the U.S. say trade envoys, they agree to continue those trade talks on phase one, a deal to try and solve the tariff situation now. A Maine transportation official says the recent sale of hundreds of miles of train tracks could bring improved infrastructure and better connectivity to the state. Nate Moulton, he's director of freight at the Maine Department of Transportation, tells the Bangor Daily News that one of the largest rail operators in North America is buying 481 miles of track in Maine, and Quebec will be the state's first return to a Class 1 railroad since the 1980s. Canadian Pacific Railway expected to close the deal to buy Central Maine and Quebec Railway by the end of the year. Moulton says the deal with Canadian Pacific comes with a hope for better equipment, better condition of lines, and more of an opportunity to connect with the rest of the rail system. Economics writer, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, sketching an optimistic view of the economy, but signaling that continued low inflation means higher interest rates won't likely be necessary anytime soon. Powell says even with unemployment near a 50-year low of 3.6%, there's still plenty of room for wages to rise and for more Americans to join the workforce. He notes annual inflation remains below the Fed's 2% target level. This is a good time to check in the world of agriculture with our good friend, the legend, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning. In grain trade yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade, an interesting day. Wheat futures climbed to a one-month high on firm domestic cash values and signs of rising global cash prices. Corn futures followed wheat higher, but soybean futures fell for the day. And at the end of the trading session yesterday at the Board of Trade, the nearby December wheat contract closed 15 cents a bushel higher. December corn up a penny and a quarter, but January soybeans dropped 4¾ cents in yesterday's trade. Meanwhile, livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, a green screen there. February lean hogs up just 10 cents a hundredweight, but at least higher. The December live cattle contract up $1.22, and the January feeder cattle contract up $2.67. Yesterday, the Mexican government again ramped up pressure on Democratic lawmakers to approve the new North American trade deal, urging House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to push it through Congress and rejecting demands for greater oversight of its labor market. President López Obrador said he would this week send another letter to House Speaker Pelosi pressing for the ratification of the three-nation deal agreed last year, known as the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. But we're still waiting for Congress, the House, to make its approval. That's Ag Biz for this morning. I'm Orion Samuelson.
If you know me from the TV or radio side, you know that theater is one of my passions and one of the great crown jewels in Chicago's beautiful crown of theaters is the Looking Glass Theater. It's housed in the old Water Tower building that didn't get destroyed in the fire, and the Looking Glass Theater found this space and said, that's where we need to make magic happen. They truly do theater in a respected way around the city and around the country like nobody else. We're going to talk about it. And the business of doing theater. Joining me is producing director and one of the founding ensemble members of Looking Glass Theater. He's also an actor. He's a writer. He's Phil Smith. Phil, I know actors love waking up this early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. It's the best.
you're up, so this is good. Hey, first of all, you've been with Looking Glass Theater since the beginning. I've already said it's really different from so many other theaters. Why don't you tell our listeners how you see it that way?
Yeah, I think from the very inception, Looking Glass had a unique mission, which I think has allowed it to sustain in a very competitive landscape. This will date me, but when we first began, MTV was all the rage in our crowd, and we wanted to be competitive with that. We wanted to make theater as interesting as the incredible attack of technology that was going on at the time, and we wanted to make theater to pull eyes towards something different, towards something just as entertaining, but potentially more interesting and more to have more impact on people's lives. And we tried to turn theater on its head a little bit. We took training in circus and movement and dance and music and other kinds of media. And so instead of just talking heads on a stage, we tried to create an immersive experience that people would see as an event and have to go to pull themselves to. And from the very beginning, that's what we've tried to do with every show.
And you're doing that now, by the way. I just recently went and took my kids to see the Steadfast Tin Soldier at the show, which was, I mean, I got to tell you, just the costumes, the scenes, spoken with nearly a word. What an incredible portrayal of Mary Zimmerman directed production. It's really unique.
It is, and I would invite everyone, if you've never been to Looking Glass, I'd invite you down to see this show, to see what all the fuss is about. It's a tight 1 hour experience. It's a holiday show. It's not really a Christmas show. It's not about Christmas or anything like that, but it's a festive experience. And it features a four person, orchestra. It features, these five actors who don't say a word. But they're elves. There are, reindeer. There are, sewer rats. There are ballerinas and tin soldiers. And it's visually spectacular. The storytelling is really tight and wonderful and funny. The sensory overload of the visuals is really pretty spectacular when you see these costumes and the set pieces. And it's all in an intimate environment. The theater's only 200 seats. And so the impact is really huge at Looking Glass. It's really, and also you go into this incredible building downtown. One of the great theater buildings in the country, I think. And many people don't know that there's a theater in there, but in the pumping station right across from the water tower, there is this intimate black box theater that houses Looking Glass and all of its endeavors. And I invite you to come down and see it. It's worth it.
I remember when you guys were first moving into that space, and I've done a special for Comcast on Looking Glass with you guys, and you all talked about when the opportunity to move into the water tower pumping station was there. At first, it was like, I don't know, do we want to do this? And then eventually, you all woke up and said, "What are we thinking? It's exactly the place we need to be."
I guess it didn't take that long for me to wake up. I was so excited about that that endeavor when I first started theater. You know, any child who tells his parents that he's going to be an actor, and a theater actor at that, the parents are in for a rude awakening. But because the first theater that I went to, I think, was in San Francisco, and it was this tiny hole in the wall, and someone was stabbed outside during one of our performances. and that was my introduction to my parents about what I'm doing with my life.
They couldn't be more proud.
Oh, so proud. But, you know, you have to start somewhere, and you start in those holes in the wall, and you start your craft, you start building, you start figuring out how to be attractive to more than just your parents. And for many years, Looking Glass has worked on this. We were itinerant for 15 years before we moved into that space. We touched down at different parts of the city. And we learned a lot. We learned how to create, and we learned how to produce. Looking Glass is the largest ensemble in the country that generates its own work, which is pretty cool. Not a lot of people know about that, but we're an ensemble of 29 now that primarily generates the artistic content from within its own group.
And you guys did David Catlin's Frankenstein and Moby Dick and 20,000 Leagues Over the Sea, you just never know what the experience is going to be there. I remember years ago, every year you and many theaters, you have kind of a theme. You and I've talked about this, but one year the theme was Theater Without a Net. And I've always said to people tied to Looking Glass, that's not your yearly theme. It's who you are. You do theater without a net. It's the risk. It's the danger. It's the gymnastics. It's amazing stuff.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because we just finished our artistic retreat. Every year the ensemble comes together for a week and pitches stories to each other, reads scripts, talks about, you know, our trajectory, what we want to do, what we want to achieve. And one of the things that we talked about was our marketing, our brand. Who are we? What's our identity? And that moniker, Theater Without a Net, popped up again. And I think you'll be seeing that in a lot of our materials coming forward, because that is really what we are. We're theater without a net, and everything that suggests. It's a risky endeavor. It's exciting. It's like hold on to your seat. Amazing when you come to the productions, and I think that sort of little phrase says it all. It really does. Very unique to Looking Glass, too.
Yeah, I'll be taking credit for that, so I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, you should. Okay. You should.
Hey, but here's the thing. Some people think, hey, I bought tickets to the show, or better yet, I have a subscription. I am keeping Looking Glass or whatever theater I'm involved with sustained and alive. I think you need to kind of wake people up and realize it. That just doesn't do it. Okay, we may have lost the connection to Phil. So while we're getting him back on, I will fill in a little bit of what his answer I expect it to be, which is ticket sales are a very small part of the overall budget of a theater. They do not maintain the operations of keeping a theater going in time. It is extremely difficult. It is the importance of donors, of people who sustain every year by giving to theater, that it's required and necessary to keep a theater going. It's not easy to do that. And every theater will always reach out. There's always people that they can count on in the community members. There are patrons of the arts who donate and give. But it really is important to sustain and support in that way. I will also tell you that coming up, in case we do run out of time with him, the next production after Steadfast Tin Soldier over at Looking Glass is going to be called, or is called, Her Honor Jane Byrne. I can't wait for that because I love politics and I love following politics. But Her Honor Jane Byrne, going to have a bit of the Jane Byrne story to it, obviously, very Chicago-based and very tied to who we do. We've got Phil back. Phil, I just answered several of the questions I was going to ask you.
Good. So I hope it went well.
But one of which is, I was excellent. But one of the things I will tap into, I talked about the importance of going beyond buying tickets, supporting with financial support of theaters, that tickets don't do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Looking Glass is a 501c3. It's a not-for-profit company. It's a charity. However, the way that we look at theater, we don't want people to come down because it's the cultural thing to do, or to get a little taste of culture before, you know, once or twice a year. We want people to come to Looking Glass because they really want to come to Looking Glass. And that's the kind of art that we create. We create an art that pulls people in instead of makes them feel like they have to go. I always want a Looking Glass. I always want the first play that someone sees to be a Looking Glass play, because you'd be into theater for the rest of your life. There is a lot of bad theater out there, I would say. And Looking Glass really strives to make sure that theater is a live art that has impact and makes us feel connected and invigorated and positive, and to sort of leave the gates feeling better than you did before and wanting to make a positive impact on the world. And
important that people donate. I mentioned the upcoming show of Her Honor Jane Byrne, talked about that while we got you back, but give the website so people can check you out.
Yeah, it's lookingglasstheater.org. The box office is 312-337-0665. It's really worth your time.
Absolutely.
I invite you to come down to Steadfast Tin Soldier and check it out.
Producing director, ensemble member, founding ensemble member of Looking Glass Theater, Phil Smith, you do great work. I love when I see you on stage as well. Thanks for joining me this morning. Happy holidays.
Thanks so much. Talk to you soon. Bye.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, outlook for today, Tuesday, November 26th. 2019, the Case-Shiller Home Price Index for September, released this morning along with the Consumer Confidence Index for November, details on new home sales from October, a flurry of earnings out today, including reports from Abercrombie & Fitch, Cracker Barrel Old Country Store, Best Buy, Hormel Foods, Dell Technologies, Dick's Sporting Goods, Dollar Tree, just some of the things that could move the markets on Tuesday, November 26th.